From Hollywood, it's Out of My Mind. I'm Jay Douglas, and in episode 11, we're going from graphic depictions to back behind the wheel to rediscovering our work, but not without taking a swope at advertising. It's 17 minutes of all the essential, non-essential, and curiously essential information we find as we use technology to bounce around the world. That's why we call it the show for baby boomers who haven't lost their curiosity. If you're not a baby boomer, you can still listen to the program. But first, study these 27 8x10 color glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back explaining what each one is, and take a seat on the Group W bench. Please pardon the draft as episode 11 of Out of My Mind begins with a trip to your next family gathering. School started again, and that means the family holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and if your last name is Adams, Halloween, are on their way. These are great opportunities to encourage your kids and grandkids to share in the pleasures of reading. And as usual, when it comes to books and anything book-related, I seek advice from the booksellers at the Elliott Bay Book Company in Seattle, Washington. On the line with us is Justice Joseph, with some suggestions for getting your kids and grandkids to put down that smartphone and pick up a book.
The first thing, have books available for them. That will make a huge difference. If there are books there, if they're visiting you, if you just have books for them, or if you send books home with them, just that availability is already going to make a huge difference. And another thing that I think is going to make a huge difference is you modeling reading.
Here's the tricky part. Modeling is about what you read. Encouragement is about what they want to read. And that's where you need to exercise some restraint, especially if you don't agree with their choices.
I think the other thing that you can do too is listen to them and their opinions. Pay attention to their interests. And then alongside that, don't judge what they're reading. If they want to read The Hunger Games, they should absolutely read The Hunger Games. That's what they're interested in. And there's a whole huge just genre now of that sort of dystopian future. So if they're into that book, they could read ones like Legend by Marie Lu. Oh, my goodness, there's so many of them. Maze Runner, which was recently a movie, too. We live in an interesting time when a lot of these young adult novels are becoming these movies, which is getting kids into reading.
I asked Justice for some other recommendations. You might want to sit down for this one.
I love giving young readers graphic novels.
Comic books?
Sometimes older people and adults, and I was there myself, are kind of resistant to that because that doesn't feel like real reading. That doesn't necessarily feel like a book, but they are, and they are amazing, and some of the best stories you'll find. And insofar as getting kids interested and, you know, just kind of hooked on stories, graphic novels, even audiobooks, it's a great way in.
I'm a little out of my element here, not having read a graphic novel, since my mother threw out my Superman collection when I was 27. Justice is a bit more current.
Delilah Dirk and the Turkish Lieutenant by Tony Cliff is one of my absolute favorite books. It is about Delilah Dirk, and she is part Robin Hood, part Indiana Jones, all adventure, good for absolutely everyone, including the baby boomers, I would say. Just all give it a try. Just such a wonderful story. Another one that came out very recently is Nimona. Again, a duo involved, except this time they're trying to be villains and are working against this hero sort of corporation, if you will. And a fun story, really good messaging in it, though, about friendship and morals, but told in this exceptionally beautiful way. And then I would be absolutely remiss if I didn't tell you about Zita, the space girl, which is one of our staff favorites here. It's about this young girl and her friend who find a red button in the middle of the field, and they press that button. When they press that button, they get transported to another planet across the universe, and it's their story of trying to get back home.
And here's another surprise suggestion from Justice.
Telling stories in your family, relating family stories and allowing for embellishment or asking them for better details and endings. Just gets them in that kind of mindset where, oh, this is what story is. This is what I can discover.
Justice Joseph is an assistant manager and children's book specialist at the Elliott Bay Book Company in Seattle, Washington. If you're a regular part of the show, you know the Elliott Bay Book Company is one of America's great independent bookstores. and that you can find a wealth of information on its website. If you're not a regular part of the show, I've put a link to their website in the show notes. You'll find them at outofmymindpodcast.com. That's outofmymindpodcast.com. Click on episode 11 and follow the link to show notes. In episode 10, Elvina Beck introduced us to the concept of co-working, an updated version of executive suites for what she calls the sharing economy. Today, Elvina suggests ways that baby boomers can overcome two of the most common obstacles to our trying out co-working: age and awkwardness. Along the way, we're going to discover the opportunity to reconnect with the values that drew us to our jobs and careers and share them with a community that can benefit from them. Let's start with age and the feeling that we're falling behind in areas like marketing, networking, technology, and popular culture, areas Elvina equates to our hipness.
I guess I would say that if baby boomers want to stay hip with the times, then co-working spaces are probably the best place to come. It's instant friends, right? Because you're under one space and one under at the same time. And sure, you don't have to talk to people, but it's very easy to, because you're all part of one membership and one community. So yeah, you make judgment calls on what you look like, or, you know, what they think, you know, your age is. But at the end of the day, if you're working on something cool, I think it's your value, probably more so than your age.
The idea of working on something cool was one Elvina returned to several times during our interview. And that's where that reconnection with our values comes into play. There's an opportunity to remind ourselves what is cool about our jobs, why we do what we do, and to share that with a generation that doesn't have our life experience with financial matters, human behavior, interpersonal relationships, let alone a historical background of the present. Whatever your area of expertise, there's much you can contribute to a co-working community, and that alone can give you a feeling of giving back and contributing. But how to show others in your co-working space that your work is cool too?
I guess the only cultural norm is just not to bug people if they're working, because especially with their headphones on, that's like a do not disturb sign very clearly. But then sometimes people have their headphones off and still, like, you know, very, very using their thumbs to type, you know, kind of work mode. And the worst thing is just to be jolted by a, "Hey, how are you? What are you doing?" And it's like, I don't really want to be polite right now.
Save those "Hi, how are you" conversations for times when people are taking a break for coffee or otherwise hanging around the common space. Then hit them up with your best pickup line.
I think the best pickup line to connect with somebody is looking at the events that are happening in that space in your community and ask, "Hey, are you going to this?" It's always good to reference something within the community that may be shared mutually by two strangers and not get too personal.
And while co-working might not be for everyone, maybe our first step toward maintaining our hipness is giving it a try, if only because it isn't safe and comfortable.
Co-working's not for everybody. A lot of people are fine in their living rooms writing in their underwear, and there's 9-to-5ers that this might never apply to. Co-working is interesting, I think, again, for people that may be leaving a job and interested in pursuing something new. You should try a co-working space, especially for a day, because what do you have to lose?
Elvina Beck operates Podshare Labs, a co-working space in Hollywood, California, and Podshare, with several co-living spaces in the Los Angeles area. She's been immersed in the co-working, co-living economy for 10 years and is an advocate for what she calls the co-everything economy, based on access rather than ownership. I've made it through 10 episodes without doing something I feel the need to apologize for, but that streak's come to an end. In episode 10, Barbara Ward, a traffic safety specialist with AAA, shared tips on making sure you and your car were a good fit. In the interests of time, there were a couple of suggestions, good suggestions, that I cut from the show. It's the kind of decision I make every week. Usually, I never give them a second thought. However, after airing Barbara's story, I ran through a personal fit checkup of my wife's car, only to discover that two of the tips I cut from the show, I failed. What concerned me is these were tips that involved serious safety issues. I didn't think they were that important at the time, and I was wrong. And I'm going to correct that omission right now. Like many of us, I often drive my wife's car, and it's been in the family for 7 years, so I thought I knew all about it. That's when I discovered something Barbara already knew from her experience with other drivers.
Something that happens pretty regularly when I do a check is I ask them to put the hazard lights on for me. And it takes them quite some time to locate them.
Important tip number one, learn to put your fingers on the hazard light switch with your eyes closed.
Let's say the husband is, 6'2" and the wife is 5'2". Are they adjusting the head restraint? The middle of the head restraint is in the back of your head. So if you touch the top of your ear and come around your head, that's where the middle of the head restraint should be.
In my case, the headrest was so low that in the event of a collision, the most it would do for me is massage my shoulders. I thank Barbara for making these suggestions, and I apologize for leaving them out of the program. In the future, I'll be more careful what I cut and why. Joining us once again is Mark Horowitz, a 35-year veteran of international film and television sales and curator of all those great 1960s films we missed while we were busy being a part of the 1960s. Today, Mark talks about another delightfully subversive film, this one written and directed by Robert Downey Sr., whose other great hit, according to Mark, was Robert Downey Jr. The film is Putney Swope, a 1969 black-and-white release with a great take on a familiar target.
The premise was that Putney Swope is the token black man on the board of directors of a very staid and old advertising agency. In the opening, the chairman of the board dies in the middle of a board meeting, keels over, and everybody on the board vies to take his spot. Somebody has the presence of mind to read the board's bylaws, and they find out that it has to be an election, and nobody can vote for themselves. So everybody thinking no one's going to vote for Putney, they all vote for Putney, and he wins 8-2 and takes over. He immediately fires the entire board and remakes the company, renames it Truth and Soul, and turns it into basically if the Black Panthers ran an advertising agency. And he decides he's not going to handle liquor accounts, he's not going to handle cigarettes, he's not going to handle weapons. We see through a lot of vignettes, a lot of the commercials that he does, and that's the parts that are in color. They're very funny, they're very subversive. He's really standing the advertising business on their ear. This is not a new meme. Advertising agencies work. It's a great form of comedy. There's a lot of satire to be done there. But also it works on another level as a really good stand-in for the establishment. The movie stars Arnold Johnson as Putney, a completely unknown actor. Arnold went on to a long career playing bit parts in TV shows and other movies, including Shaft, Ironsides, and things like that. The only name that I could recognize in watching the movie was Antonio Fargas, who had a big career, and we all remember as Huggy Bear on Starsky and Hutch, and he plays Putney's number one aide. Now, I was watching this movie again after not seeing it for many years, and I was realizing that how much of it was actually very sexist and misogynistic. Women in this movie are treated as nothing but objects. They're shown naked. Jiggling breasts appear in many of the advertising campaigns. Putney catches Antonio Fargas and one of the secretaries having sex in the office. He can't condone it, but he fires the girl and keeps Antonio Fargas. It then ends up that girl becomes his girlfriend. A lot of other throwaway lines were very, very sexist and would never, ever, ever see the light of day in any movie or TV show today. Also, it's a great parable on how power corrupts. And Putney, who starts off as remaking advertising in the image of, minorities, black power, wanting to do it right, not wanting to take on advertising from bad sources, cigarettes, liquor, guns and stuff, ends up being just as bad as the bosses he's replacing. When clients come to him, all he demands is cash, $1 million per client. They keep it in a large vat. And he says to them, I'm going to create what I want to create. You're going to love it. It'll double your sales, or you get your money back. But I have complete creative control, and I never want to see you again. And they all buy into it. And he starts off quite nice. As he becomes more established, as his fame grows, he attracts the attention of everybody from the President of the United States, who's played by a midget, which is Robert Downey's social commentary on the Nixon years, I guess. And including the black community. And in one scene, everybody from Black Panthers to community activists come to him looking for money. They want handouts. They want donations to buy guns, to help establish community controls, and he rejects them all. I don't think Downey had an ending for this film. By the end of the movie, Putney has told his staff he's decided to take on cigarettes and liquor and guns for advertising. A few of the ideologues protest. He fires them. Everybody else who stays, he looks at them and says, okay, thanks for your help, gets up, goes down to where all the money's kept, takes a duffel bag full of money, and splits and tells his staff to divide the rest of the money among themselves. Not a very satisfying ending. It certainly didn't tie up a lot of loose ends, but the effort throughout the whole movie was fantastic. I mean, Downey really had a good sense of satire and a way to really tweak conventions. There's another great scene in the movie where a guy comes to Putney in the height of his powers and he hands him a bottle. It's a new spot remover I've invented. It works great, but it smells really bad. And Putney takes a whiff of it and recoils in horror and hands it to one of his assistants and says, put some soy sauce in it and something else and bottle it. We'll sell it as a soft drink in the ghetto. And he just walks away. And I just thought, oh my God, nothing changes.
Mark Horowitz is a 35-year veteran of international film and television sales and keeper of the subversive, oft-forgotten, and thoroughly enjoyable films of our youth. He'll be back in a few episodes with another film. In the meantime, you can find Putney Swope online and on DVD, and I'll put links in the show notes. No need to advertise that this brings to a close episode 11 of Out of My Mind. I do want to advertise, though, that all episodes of the show are now available on YouTube, where they're easier to find and listen to than fumbling with those podcast applications. Just go to outofmymindpodcastonyoutube.com. You don't even have to write that down. When you want to listen to the show, think Out of My Mind Podcast on YouTube, add.com, and there you are. And that's where we'll be next Saturday at 8 a.m. Eastern with a brand new show for baby boomers like you who haven't lost their curiosity. Thank you for being a part of today's show, and let's talk next week. In fact, I'm putting it on my calendar right now. I'm Jay Douglas. Out of My Mind is produced by Penny Summers and is a production of The Theater of Your Mind, Incorporated, Hollywood, California.